Okay, good morning, everyone, and welcome to the United Lodge of Theosophists in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. We have a list on the back here. It used to be by city, now it's by country and then city, of our periodical, which comes out quarterly. The new one is on its way. Okay? It's on its way. It's hot off the press. So we should have that by the end of the meeting. This one is still current as of today. And we'd like to mention that all the activities of this lodge are voluntary, and everything is, all the voluntary time, money, service is gladly welcomed, but there's nothing is imposed or implied here. We don't pass a hat, but if you want to make a contribution, you can make one at the book table, or there's a little box on top of the right-hand side cases on the way out the door. So we open here on Sundays at 10:30. It's on.
Is this on?
It's on. We open here at 10:30 on Sundays, and the meeting is from 11 to noon. And every month we have an overall umbrella topic. This month we have five Sundays, and the powers of mind is the overall topic. True faith and spiritual knowledge. So one panelist will talk about true faith for a few minutes, and then the other, spiritual knowledge, for a few minutes. So from 11 to 12 on Sunday is our meeting. On Wednesdays, we're studying In the Ocean of Theosophy by William Q. Judge, and the doors open at 5:15. There's a library, reference library, with a librarian available for any questions if you have them. That's open from 5:15 to 7:15. Our meetings begin at 7:30 promptly and end promptly at 8:30. We would like to read our declaration here of the United Lodge of Theosophists before we begin the first talk. The policy of this lodge is independent devotion to the cause of Theosophy, without professing attachment to any theosophical organization. It is loyal to the great founders of the theosophical movement, but does not concern itself with dissensions or differences of individual opinion. The work it has on hand and the end it keeps in view are too absorbing and too lofty to leave it the time or the inclination to take part in side issues. That work and that end is the dissemination of the fundamental principles of the philosophy of Theosophy and the exemplification in practice of those principles through a truer realization of the self, a profounder conviction of universal brotherhood. It holds that the unassailable basis for union among Theosophists, wherever and however situated, is similarity of aim, purpose, and teaching, and therefore has neither constitution, bylaws, nor officers, the sole bond between its associates being that basis. And it aims to disseminate this idea among Theosophists in the furtherance of unity. It regards as Theosophists all who are engaged in the true service of humanity, without distinction of race, creed, sex, condition, or organization, and it welcomes to its association all those who are in accord with its declared purposes and who desire to fit themselves by study and otherwise to be the better able to help and teach others. The true Theosophist belongs to no cult or sect, yet belongs to each and all. So we will begin with the power of the mind, true faith. Okay.
Pick it up.
Well, we do have, if,
yeah,
we do have this here at the usher's table there that does list the meetings for April, May, and June.
Good.
Okay.
Okay.
So one very brief quote to start out. This is from the book Hebrews in the Bible. Faith gives substance to our hopes and makes us certain of realities we do not see. Now, in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that all men must have some kind of faith. We all have faith in something, whether it's reason faith or just a faith in the unknown and unseen and unreasoned, for that matter, that hasn't been, you know, just as Mr. Judge says, like the senseless jog trot of daily existence. If we just accept things as are, on the authority of others, whether it be parents, friends, or the church, synagogue, or mosque, we need it, that's a blind faith. There's three kinds of faith, and they go along with the three gunas, or the three qualities, that is talked about much in the Bhagavad Gita. There's the pure, which is sattva. The sattvic quality is pure. It is expressed in harmony and rhythm. Then there's rajas, which is a lot of motion, a lot of activity, always changing from one form to another, from one idea to another. And thirdly, there is tamas, which is, it's negative, it never changes. It's founded in inertia, as we mentioned, acceptance without reason or thought given to it. It's kind of hard. It's inert. It's the best way to say it's it's a necessary quality, but it's not an overall quality that we strive for. We generally try to transcend it. But above these three gunas, if we put them all together, that's what we want, because they all work together, just like three points of the triangle. They all really aren't necessary, and they all work together. So the good thing about tamas is its stability. Once we have a reasoned faith, then we have a sense of stability, and it's kind of a higher form of tamas. Now, rajas is motion. It yields a knowledge of faith that is wider and deeper. Now, the scientist and the philosopher, they reason, and they're always going from one idea to another, broader and deeper as they go along. But this true faith really should be within us. Faith energized by motion, always moving on, is common among intellectuals and scientists. So, this is self-expression, and it is very necessary in the process of determining, what reality really is. In one sense, all is Maya, it's all illusion, but these are illusions that we created for ourselves, and they're necessary illusions that we must learn, in a sense, how to see through and transcend and see the one reality, which is the higher self, which is also the self of all, not just our higher self. It's not separative, because to have true faith, we need to see beyond limitations. So once we realize, once we come to the realization that the only true faith is rooted in our higher self, objects and knowledge which change, we see beyond the changes, the impressions, the passions, the desires. The first step in realizing true faith is self-reliance, not on external authority, but our true self is immortal. It can't be destroyed. It goes beyond obstacles. That's the first step. Secondly, we need to work within the material world. We need to know the law. Law rules on all planes, but instead of being under the law, once we know the law and become one with the law, we can use the law. The law is no longer our master, but it is a servant. So we're not our feelings, our bodies, our thoughts, or our ideas. These are all tools to be used in different and varying ways. The I never changes. Now there's three priorities here. We'll close with this. Priority one is to transform Thomas. Get rid of as much junk as you can. Priority two, balance Rajas. Cultivate energy and movement in a balanced way. And priority three, develop sattva. Develop peace, contentment, and self-awareness. So we will now go to part two of our panel.
Now we come up with this idea of spiritual knowledge. We want to start off from a writing by William Q. Judge. Why are we humankind here? For experience and emancipation of the soul, for the purpose of raising the entire mass of manifested matter up to the sattvic nature, which was spoken of, and dignity of conscious godhood. So, when we come with this idea of spirit, we could say everything is spirit. Everything is soul. And this idea of soul, with these theosophical teachings that bear all of the ancient teachings, is we are soul. Not that we work around it, but the fact that we are true souls in our true nature, in an evolutionary system. So the spirit, if we look at this idea of spiritual knowledge, spirit is the power to become. Soul, which we are, is the becoming. Spirit is the power to see and know. Soul is the knowing. So if we look at the idea of, in the breakdown in the system of man's nature, when we think of the Buddhi nature, this is spiritual soul. And the wisdom religion is soul knowledge. So it's about all three applications of knowledge, the use of our senses, the use of the mind, and the soul. These are inherent in nature and are omnipresent. Our true vision is from within ourselves, and from within arises his limitations. Because for us to understand this, we have an individuality part of our nature, and we have a personality part of our nature. We could look at the personality part of the nature as our costume that we wear in any play that we're in. With this in mind, we can understand that there are senses that affect us. There are things within the mind, the thinker, and the soul. So it also is inherent in nature, as stated, its omnipresence. So our true vision is from within ourselves, and from within arises its limitations. Now there's the important thing, is the limitations. That has to deal with any personal life that we have in any lifetime. And it speaks of the idea that there are three doors to knowledge. And one is the idea of having an open mind, then that of having a pure heart, and living the natural right kind of life. This comes with knowledge, to understand, and it has to also be a part of our nature that we're past the questioning. We want to really know, where do I fit in with this? So when we hear the term manas, we must remember this means the thinker that we are. And it can say as well as his or her thoughts, the knower as well as the knowledge. Human nature is a compound of knowledge and ignorance. Ignorance that we have developed by the use of our senses in previous lives, so that in any one lifetime, it might be more obvious than others. But that constant part of our nature that does know, that we hit upon sometimes through the other stages beside the waking state. We're speaking of the sleeping and the dreaming and the deep states that we go through. There's one thing that we have to all acknowledge. Consciousness is not only on this plane. It's in the sleeping and the dreaming and the deep sleep. Consciousness never ceases. It is universal. It is always there. It's these costumes that we have to work on and what we've made of them, how we're going to come through it. So if we can do this, we can understand that the function of memory is not at all reliant or dependent upon the physical brain. It's held within us and stored within us. So we've also looked at the idea of reminiscence, which is an intuitional perception, the memory of the soul. In other words, there are parts of our nature that go through situations that sometimes we go through them in a very confused way. Other ways that we go through it is very definite. It's like a knowing. I don't know where I got it from, but I just know this is the balance part that I need to know about. So this, again, is gained through many a lifetime and is from spirit. It is the direct possession of the knowledge of the past. So wisdom and truth, we can say, are synonymous terms. Divinity is the conquest of ignorance by the revelation of the secret or inner spiritual knowledge. Now, we stand between the spiritual and the material pole as aspects of manifestation and manifesting nature. It's all one basic system. And from the spirit comes its reflection, or light, we can say, and from the other pole, matter, comes its light or reflection, for we live within matter. We control matter, we cannot control matter, we can revivify matter, we can change matter, but both are for the use of those who are truly trying to tread that path which leads to higher things. And it's not an easy path to take, and it doesn't happen just in one lifetime. It can be from accumulated times. So if we use this idea of a power within us, the thinking being of reproducing past impressions, reminiscent is the memory, as stated, of the soul. So we happen to come across the author, who was a poet, a Christine Rossetta, who lived in England from 1830 to 1894, who was familiar with the writings of HPB, and she was at the same time around. And these are well-known lines that assist us. Does the road wind uphill all the way? Yes, to the very end. Does the journey the whole long day? From morn till night, my friend. Knowledge, that little saying, knowledge is based upon observation and experience. So we can see that it doesn't happen overnight, but we have the ability to start to try to balance and understand our life. So if we go this way, the distinction between spirit and soul, which is which, the individuality is the divine ego that is constantly moving from lifetime to lifetime. And then there's the personality, which is the human animal, the form that we have to work through, the form that in any one lifetime we have put the energies into building. So depending on how our health is, how our mental capacity is, all this adds up to what we've gained or regained of true spiritual knowledge within us. So if we look at that part, when we speak, we use the expression, the man is, there's that higher triangle, and then there's the lower quadrangle, which most of us live in daily around. It is a type of evolution from within outward. And that's our main purpose in life, is to be able to tap all the knowledge we have gained through, if it's been a fact that it's been over, is it 15 million? 18 million years, reincarnating from life to life, from form, from male to female, constantly trying to regain a knowledge that was once in our true possession. And if we look to the fact that there are masters and great sages all down through the ages that have tried to re-give out the information and the pathway, the trails that must be taken by any individual in any one lifetime to make that decision to try to tread back to the truth. So it's our whole purpose in life. Evolution comes from that within, outward. We have to work on it. And if we look at the idea of spirit is the power to become, and soul is the becoming of it, and that spirit has the power to see and know, and the soul is the seeing and the knowing. If we take the two and combine them, we're on our way to at least starting the trek of the regaining our true knowledge. Higher Manas is the permanent individuality which carries the most ideal or spiritual results and values of all the different lives led on earth or elsewhere. The higher aspect of Manas is the intuitional, that which knows directly and does not depend on reason. So this pooling this all together, that the memory of the soul is carried in the reminiscence, in the reminiscence. So that brings us to that end of it. So do we have any questions or comments?
Go ahead.
But we all know that our faith isn't based on the truth. We are oftentimes disappointed.
Right.
But we come to Theosophy, and it says that there are some basic ideas that we can base our faith on, and that we can try and test, check, and verify if we can identify that within our own nature. Could you sort of give us an idea of what these basic truths are?
Well, the three fundamental principles that this philosophy stands on, the three basic fundamental principles, we can go into in detail, I guess, or we can just give us a guideline. And my mind is now just went
deity,
blank,
law,
and
evolution.
That deific principle that's within all of us that has to deal with that idea of spiritual knowledge. So that deific principle is always there. Not that we know of it or tap on it. There are those who can and do tap on it. So on that part of the fact, that deific principle is what lights all of us. Now, do you want to take one of the others?
Sure. Well, there's law, which is karma and reincarnation. And law rules on all planes. The expression, ignorance of the law is no excuse, it holds true, but we learn by making mistakes. By having these principles and guidelines that we test, check, and verify, and we grow by self-induced and self-devised means. So, Theosophy is for, well, it's for everybody, but it works best when a person really wants to do some deep thinking and some soul searching, and is moving beyond the whatever beliefs that have been inculcated in us. You know, there's education and there's inculcation. Mm. Education is really all the truth is within us already. It's already there, but education comes from educare, which means to draw out. Inculcation is putting in, is putting ideas in. So we've had a lot of ideas put into our heads, some good, some bad, some indifferent. And we have faith. We all have faith in something, whether it's intelligent faith or kind of a lazy, misguided faith. You know, we all use it to get through the day and get through our lives.
And that leads us to the third one, that of the whole idea, the whole evolution. And the part that we play in it, that nature plays in it, that all the kingdoms below the thinking man, the animal, the vegetable, all these lower kingdoms have that same goal. And within time, for instance, the animal has very strong instinctual ways of doing things, of knowing things. For most of us is, oh, I'll never do that again. We sort of have to sort of stumble through a situation. They have that keen sense of knowing, and they sort of live basically by the basic needs that they need. But there is that spirit within them. And that spirit within them, just as we are now, has to work its way up to this whole vast period of evolution.
So through evolution, we grow from strength to strength. In the back.
But like faith, aren't there also certain principles that are impressed in the true nature, the eternal nature of man? I'm thinking about the sense of self, that eternal self, universal brotherhood, altruism. Right. Isn't faith akin to that, or is that a power of mind?
Well, there's true faith, and then there's many other faiths that are limited. So those lofty ideas are true faith. But as Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, every man has some kind of faith. So there's limited faith, there's misguided faith, and often those that are the most convinced about their faith are really the most ignorant of other faiths and philosophies. They've just, you know, they're so indoctrinated, and it works for them. It does. They truly see. You know, if they pray for something, they get it. Maybe they don't get it, but they think they'll get it someday. Or, I mean, there's so many channels on TV about, you know, preachers. There's so many preachers on TV, and most of them, the bottom line, it seems to be that, you know, if you believe and you send money, you'll get what you want. And it's really sad, because there's no really greater sin, in a sense, than selling spiritual ideas, because it's our legacy. We've already been indoctrinated, but through eons of misuse, and we've come to the point where we are today. And we do live in a dark age, the Kali Yuga, where everything is topsy-turvy, everything is upside down. Those in high places are often really not worthy of their positions. And yet many people who are struggling and have no position have a lot of the knowledge and the basis that is really necessary.
In the Christian world, there's a great divide over those that are faith-based. All you have to do is believe in a particular Messiah to be saved, versus the Christians that are work-based. That, right. You know, it's how you live and what you do that designates salvation. Where does the ULT fall? Where does theosophy fall in that range?
I would think we're more of a balance or a harmony if we take and start to look at some of the knowledge that is available to us and test it ourselves, rather than, because sometimes we go through situations and there's something within it that says, this is not going to work. Where is this knowledge coming from? You're putting all this stuff together, but there's something within you saying, this is not the right way. This is not the balance. It's not the justice. It's not the harmony. Where is this coming from? It's not just from this one personal life. It's innate within you that just keeps nagging at you. We're in the lower kingdoms, and this is what we call undeveloped, yes, but they're following the lines of universal ideas better than a human thinking being is at times, because they know when to kill, they know when to eat, they know when to sleep, they know when to move on, when to stay. There are those that even the plants, the seasons, they work within the seasons automatically. It's not like, I'm not going to have a field of corn this year. I'm not going to be planted. And this type of thing you can mentally see, but nature seems to take care of its own. And when nature goes off, as we say, off the wheel, a lot of that is caused by the intelligent thinking within mankind relating back to nature. And then nature has to, like, let off steam, shall we say. So when we look at the world that we're living in, what we have given to it or what we have taken from it, is there a balance there? Maybe there isn't. Maybe that's probably why a lot of things are affected today's world. But this has to be from vast periods of time that this is built up, that it comes. And it was stated, we are in that Kali Yuga age. The only beauty of that is it's the shortest and fastest age. We can gain more knowledge and experience in this age than we could in the earlier ages. So the opportunity is there again, and as stated, this is not the first time we've come across these ideas. It's the part of our nature that individuality and personality is got to get on a balance. It's got to get together because the personality has overruled. And so many times we go through situations and we just move with the situation. We're not questioning. We're not studying it. We're just impulsively moving along. So.
Right. So we need to be the observer at all times. Yes.
Yes, I'm a student of science and a bit of a student of theosophy. I heard you mention the word 18 million years of evolution. Where did that come from?
Well, it's written in the Secret Doctrine, and the Secret Doctrine was inspired by Masters of Wisdom. The writer of the Secret Doctrine, H.P. Blavatsky, claimed no knowledge of her own, that this is just being passed on. There's vast cycles, and when the mind principle, Manas, became incarnated in the waiting form, the animal man, before was blameless and irresponsible, but there's the lighting up of mind, the lighting up of Manas, like one candle lighting many. And that is said to have occurred 18 million years ago. We can't really go into it any more than that.
That's speculative at best.
Well, yeah, it's all, these are...
Science doesn't agree,
but, well, science is speculative. Science is always disagreeing with what they said last week.
The evidence-based science doesn't agree with that. So it's okay that you can say that.
Sure, well, you can...
a belief system.
Right, we can agree to disagree. Science is a belief system too.
Yeah, but based on evidence.
But they don't have all the evidence. They never have all the evidence. Go ahead.
Well, when it comes to things like that, when we talk about 18 million years, the cycles and the conditions of matter are such that today's physical scientific tools are not able to measure. Physical science is limited to the physical world. There's so much more that's been going on beyond that. And the masters of wisdom have the tools to see and recognize what's there. So there's no one who's expected to believe any of this, but a long, deep study of the philosophy helps one to understand the benefits of
and
appreciating it.
And of course, the ancient teachings from the East are very helpful, because it's funny, if you start a study of all the ancient teachings and all spread out all over, they all say the same thing. And even science moves ahead constantly. They're finding out this and that. And just within scientific world, with this universe alone, just looking out at night into the stars, they have learned so much more than they did before. And they're constantly moving and changing. And as was stated, they have things they can do now that they couldn't have done before.
So when we talk about 18 million years ago, physical matter was different at that point in time. And so if we talk about physical science, when I was in second grade, I was taught that the moon was a chunk of dirt that broke off from the evolution of the Earth. But within a few years from that, we found that moon rocks are so far beyond the age of the Earth. Things like this will never stop as man evolves and comes to understand science in more than just the physical sense.
Yes.
And yet theosophy has taught since way before then that the moon is far older than the Earth.
True, yes.
The scientists share something with the student of theosophy in a certain way, in that a true, pure researcher using the scientific method is testing a particular premise. They're making observations or experimenting or comparing notes with other thinkers, and they gradually develop theories that they then present in the hopes that these theories will be either proved or disproved or improved. So there is this reasoned faith in the nature of the human being able to grow and gain wisdom. That's all shared. But certainly we've come a long way since the flat earth theories and all the others.
Right, well, theosophy is a synthesis of science, religion, and philosophy. And theosophy is not at odds with scientists, not at all. And there have been many scientists who have studied the philosophy and gained from it the secret doctrine, Albert Einstein being the most prominent.
Right.
We're more concerned with our own evolution than the numbers, really, because, you know, we're more concerned with altruism and universal brotherhood and peace than with cold, hard facts. And some of these cold, hard facts are, you know, in the 1890s, they were saying that, you know, the atom couldn't be split, billiard balls, matter were like billiard balls, and even made the claim that we've learned everything. We now know everything. So scientists don't talk that way today, and we're not at odds with them. We can gain a lot. Sometimes it can be mutually. We can work together. We don't have to be at odds with one another.
Well, we can use science to verify the things that we now think is true. You know, we are told that we are in evolution. We're constantly moving. We're constantly changing. nothing is ever the same. And but then we're, our evolution begins in spirit and ends in matter and then reascends to spirit again.
Right.
That's part of the evolutionary process. But how do we check, test, and verify that? Well, there's an ancient history that we do not know of because it is not discussed in our public systems. There is an ancient knowledge of past great civilizations. There's the Dendrobium calendar that is found in Egypt has three sidereal cycles at 75,000 years that they that have been, you know, tracked. You look at Hinduism, they have an ancient cosmology that's trillions of years old that that tracks time in that sense. We think of time only with in the last 2,000, 4,000 years. But if we can let that go and look at, it's an infinite number of years. We're always moving. We're always going back towards spirit as a humanity, as an individuality. You know, we are spiritual beings. We are not these bodies. We just use them. And, you know, we talk of, there's so many things that we talk about, the septenary nature of man, you know. I mean, the astral body, who talks about the astral body? But that's the body in which this physical body is formed. And that's the link. Now, we cannot see into the past because the astral body is where everything is formed and is from that. But,
right.
You know, the astral body is starry matter.
Right, it's electromagnetic.
Electromagnetic.
And it vivifies everything.
But you state these things to a scientist, and what evidence do you have? What evidence? Well, we have evidence that we have gathered on our own to intuitively think this. There's truth here. You know, this electromagnetism that we talk about, or the world is made up of, you know, we know our body is electromagnetic. We walked across a carpet and our bedroom slippers and got shocked. We know that we're a conductor and we're generators of it. So, I mean, there's little facts and evidences that we see that, you know, that perhaps a scientist will say we can't make a conclusion from that. Well, if the premise is that we are a unity and a oneness, and we're not separate, you know.
Right. Well, science is always developing more sophisticated tools and instruments, and that's great. That's great. In the corner there?
Yeah. But one of the things we need to remember, too, is that between both of those speakers, I mean, we've been discussing that there's different kinds of faith, and that the true faith is an inward knowing, that spiritual knowledge, that true spiritual knowledge is an inward knowing that gives us the true faith. Whereas when we're talking about science, that's the external expression, and people have faith in science, but that is not the inward true expression of faith. It changes, and we've talked before that there's so many things that one can have faith in, and then a year or two down the road, it changes. Whatever that that was that you were had that faith in, it's like even with the Catholic Church, the Pope decides he's going to change some kind of, you know, dogma that they believed in. So there, they have to change their faith based on what one person says. Whereas when it comes from true spiritual faith, that inward knowing, that will never change. But science it's like now they're saying that eating eggs is bad again. You know,
so
it's like every year, you know, they keep changing, you know, what we should eat, you know. And one thing, it's interesting when different tests and research is being done, they can skew the findings based on how they wanted to turn out. So we can't even depend upon scientific research sometimes, because it can be pointed in the direction that they wanted to come out.
Well, we're all human, and we're all liable. We're all liable to error. That's all. And we can't say, can't put people in a box. In the back? All the way in the back?
You.
Yes.
You.
It would be possible, I guess, for someone to come to the philosophy of theosophy and just on blind faith, just accept everything and try to turn it into a dogma or a ritual or a creed of some kind. But that's not really the invitation when we're using mind powers, is it?
Hmm.
What would a true student do when coming to the philosophy?
Well, it does broaden one's scope of what they've known previously. There are some that are just naturals that you don't need to balance it. They are balanced. There are those we all must have met someone or have known of those that people just seem to know balance, harmony, a give and taking. They just know it naturally. And in today's world, the youth, and when we say youth, we're talking about young children, of what they're endeavoring to do, and knowledge that they maybe haven't gotten at home. It's just a knowing they want to help, they want to share, they want to give, we should all help. It's a different attitude that a lot of the children have, and they're expressing it. And this is our youth of today. It's overwhelming what they've actually done and promoted and had people thinking and questioning. Yeah?
Well, we could say generally, if someone pursues theosophy new in this lifetime, a lot of times they're coming to theosophy in pursuit of what it is they do not know. All they know is however they were raised, often, not always, in whatever religion they may have been, they just don't get it. They don't believe in it. They don't accept it.
Right.
It's, for them, for some, it's baloney. And for a lot of folks who come here, what they find in theosophy is actually one of the main things that theosophy has in common with science, and that is that law prevails. What's different about theosophy from religion is that whatever goes on in the mystical or metaphysical or spiritual realms, that's all according to something that was written, whether it's logical or not. If a precept is true, it's true. And you gotta follow the path
right. With
the rest of the sheep. Whereas theosophy would say, if you don't think it's true, suspend it. Don't accept anything that you don't think is true. But first and foremost, it's the pursuit of truth in terms of pursuit of the law. And that's what physical science brought to the Western world. Against the church was, let's not be ridiculous, and that's what science was all about in Europe when it came to the fore. It's just that it did so, unfortunately, only recognizing the physical side of reality because of its full rejection of what the church enforced for so many centuries. So theosophy is the synthesis of the two, that even on the metaphysical planes, there is law. Just don't believe it. Prove it to yourself.
So there's the... When someone is coming to theosophy, there are no dogmas. Nothing needs to be accepted at all. So often people's faith has failed them. That's why they're here. It doesn't work, whatever they had faith in. Then they're looking here. And we don't have all the answers. They can look somewhere else too. They can look everywhere. This is a method. So we often will suspend belief and then try to be the observer and look at things objectively. So theosophy is more Socratic than Aristotelian. And there's the two main ways of looking at things. So we look at universal principles and then try to find the particulars and then work it through back to universal principles. Whereas Aristotle broke with Socrates and Plato and wanted to start his own method. And, you know, going from particulars and then looking for universals, they can both be used. They're not, but what we're saying is that theosophy is more Socratic. Socrates pretended he had no knowledge at all. And he made a lot of enemies because he asked a lot of questions and he was accused of corrupting the youth. But often that happens when somebody keeps asking you questions that are testing your faith in something, it can get to the point where you're getting frustrated and angry, actually. But we try to have harmony here as much as possible.
Did
you want to close?
Yes.
I had an idea that was just mentioned about suspending one's faith or one's belief system is often where we all must begin when we come here, because a lot of these ideas are the complete antithesis of what we've been taught. For many of us, we are dumbfounded when we hear that the moon is the mother of the earth, or that we haven't evolved from apes, that there's a whole other system of thought that weren't even aware of it. But it's what you were saying is going from universals to particulars, and then back again to universals. So that the basis of our thought is more cohesive. You know, I mean, the greatest test of our understanding is, look at religion. All our faith has been put in that. Now, look at our world.
I know.
Look at our world, the conflict, the hatred, and all that's arisen because of looking for an outside God, that something outside of us is going to solve our problems.
Yeah. Or a person.
We'd like to close with an idea to something to ponder on. It's an article that came from one of the magazines called Evolution of Soul. This evolution begins in the highest state of life, not the lowest. Likewise, does it end, find its fruition in the highest state. The wide difference between theosophical teachings and those which pass for religion and science may be seen in this. All life is in the evolution from supreme spirit, and at the close of any period of evolution, it returns to the supreme. The whole purpose of evolution is that man shall realize supreme spirit in himself through the only means by which any realization was ever gained by any being, through experience, action, contact, and transformation. So that gives us some ideas to think about. That's it for me.
Meeting is adjourned.